This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. Former U.S. presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, who lost to Trump in 2016, weighed in on the impeachment inquiry he's facing with a look back before Trump arrived in Washington.
I think it is fair to say we have known who Donald Trump is for some time now. We knew he was a corrupt businessman who cheated people. We knew that his campaign invited foreign adversaries to tamper with our elections. And now we know that in the course of his duties as our president, he's endangered us all by putting his personal and political interests ahead of the interests of the American people.
Clinton was speaking at an event here in Washington marking the 50th anniversary of NARAL, Pro-Choice America, a leading abortion rights advocacy group. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi early in the evening said that a whistleblower's complaint at the center of Congress impeachment inquiry showed that Trump was engaged in a cover-up. The complaint alleges that the president abused the power of his office to solicit interference from a foreign country in next year's U.S. election. The complaint says the White House tried to lock down the information to cover it up, in part by moving it to a different computer server. President Trump has denied doing anything wrong. Afghanistan is bracing for possible violence ahead of Saturday's presidential election amid an effectively stalemated war and postponed U.S. peace talks with the Taliban. The insurgents are threatening to attack polling stations and some political candidates. Concerned about potential fraud or threatening violence if elections are not considered fair and transparent. For details on more news, please join us at voanews.com or on the VOA mobile app. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. The National Transportation Safety Board is issuing several recommendations as part of investigations into two deadly crashes of Boeing 737 MAX jets in Indonesia and Ethiopia. AP's Ed Donahue reports.
One recommendation is that Boeing should consider how confusion in the cockpit can slow down response by pilots when there is some kind of problem. The suggestion is Boeing underestimates response time to diagnose and react because of multiple alarms going off, competing for attention. MAX planes crashed in Indonesia and Ethiopia in the past year, killing 348 people. It will be up to investigators there to determine what caused the accidents. Preliminary reports point to an anti-stall system that kicked in based on faulty sensor readings, pushing the noses of the planes down. Ed Donahue, Washington.
The Republican-led U.S. Senate has confirmed lawyer Eugene Scalia as Labor Secretary. The AP's Mike Gracia has more on that story.
Voting along party lines, the Republican-led Senate confirmed Attorney Eugene Scalia, a son of the late Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, as President Donald Trump's new Labor Secretary. The vote was 53-44. The 56-year-old Scalia spent most of his career as a partner in the Washington office of the Gibson, Dunn & Crutcher firm, representing business interests challenging labor and financial regulations. Scalia also served for a year as the Labor Department top lawyer during the George W. Bush administration. The AFL-CIO opposed Scalia, calling him a union-busting lawyer. Mike Gracia, Washington.
Federal health officials say vaping-related lung illnesses are on the rise across the United States. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
Federal health officials say at least 13 people have now died from vaping-related lung illnesses across the United States. There's been a 52% increase in the number of lung illnesses linked to vaping reported this week, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. There are 805 cases with at least 13 deaths. Researchers say that most patients said they had vaped products containing THC, the ingredient that produces a high in marijuana. But some patients said they vaped only nicotine. Health officials are advising people to stay away from e-cigarettes and all vaping products until they can figure out what's causing these life-threatening lung illnesses. I'm Jackie Quinn.
Saudi Arabia, for the first time, is opening up to the international tourism. The historic move is widely seen as a way for the Middle Eastern country to lessen its dependence on revenue from oil. Friday, the kingdom will announce the 49 countries whose residents will be eligible for visas to Saudi Arabia. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, September the 27th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leone's president makes a forceful plea for Africa on the UN Security Council.
Africa remains to be the only region without representation in the permanent category of the Security Council. Africa demands two permanent seats with all the rights and prerogatives of current members.
President George Weah describes what he calls a creeping threat to Liberia's democracy. Somalia's president is confident of delivering a final blow to Al-Shabaab. The alleged poison leader of Zimbabwe's striking doctors has left the country for treatment. Meanwhile, former President Robert Mugabe's body will be buried tomorrow, Saturday, in his hometown.
The family of the late former president, Robert Mugabe, has made the decision that they would like to bury him in Zimba. And as the custom and policy, government will follow their lead.
Nick Magwana is the permanent secretary at the Zimbabwe Ministry of Information. The first contingent of 500 refugees from Libya have arrived in Rwanda, and Kenya will cut civil servants' wage bill. Those stories by Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sierra Leone President Julius Maada Bio has made perhaps one of the most forceful and passionate pleas for Africa to get a permanent seat on the UN General Security Council. President Bio is coordinator of the African Union Committee on the Reform of the UN Security Council. Speaking Thursday at the ongoing 74th United Nations General Assembly in New York, President Bio said the legitimacy and effectiveness of the Security Council's decisions, as well as the relevance of the United Nations, will continue to be questionable if urgent action is not taken to make the Council more broadly representative.
Our historic pledge to early reform of the Security Council as an essential element of our overall effort to reform the United Nations must be upheld and implemented without further delay. The legitimacy and effectiveness of the Security Council's decision, as well as the relevance of the United Nations, will continue to be questioned if urgent action is not taken to make the Council more broadly representative. Africa remains to be the only region without representation in the permanent category of the Security Council and is also underrepresented in the non-permanent category. In this context, Africa demands two permanent seats with all the rights and prerogatives of current members, including the right of veto, and two additional non-permanent seats is a matter of common justice and the right to have an equal say in decision-making on issues pertaining to international peace and security. This long-standing injustice and imbalance perpetrated in the present configuration of the Security Council should be of grave concern to all of us, which ought to be addressed now. As the coordinator of the African Union Committee of 10, Heads of State and Government, on the reform of the United Nations Security Council, we are convinced that this reform should address the long-standing injustice and imbalance in the present configuration of the Security Council. We believe that the prevailing geopolitical realities are compelling for a comprehensive reform of the Security Council to make way for equitable geographic representation. Africa's patience is being tested. We therefore urge the Assembly to collectively support our urgent call for Africa's representation in the Security Council as espoused in the Erzurumi Consensus and SART declarations.
Sierra Leone President Julius Maada Bio speaking Thursday at the ongoing 74th United Nations General Assembly in New York. Liberian President George Mani Weah has accused his political opposition of instigating what he calls creeping threat to Liberia's democracy. Mr. Weah, speaking this week at the ongoing 74th United Nations General Assembly, said those who wish Liberia well should not allow such instability to take place.
Mr. President, we are beginning to witness the emergence of a creeping threat to our democratic space and to our hard-won peace and stability. Some individuals within and out of our country, particularly those who have lost democratically held elections have resulted to incitement, threats of violence, misuse of social media, and hate speech with the aim and objective of achieving power through undemocratic means. This is unacceptable and must not be encouraged by those who wish Liberia well. For democracy to strive, all Liberians, including both the ruling parties and the opposition party, must respect the rule of law and abide by the procedures and regulations prescribed therein. As the leading opposition party in Liberia, during the past 12 years, our party, the Congress for Democratic Change, accepted the disputed results of two previous presidential elections in 2005 and in 2011 in the interest of peace. We must all learn to respect the mandates of our electorate, even when that mandate is not in our favor, and not be selective in our support for democracy only when we win.
Liberian President George Manu Wia speaking this week at the ongoing 74th United Nations General Assembly in New York. Somalia's President Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed Farmajo has thanked international partners and the United Nations for what he called their constructive role in Somalia's successful journey to full recovery from its difficult past. Speaking Thursday at the ongoing 74th United Nations General Assembly, President Farmajo says Somalia is building a well-trained army to rid Somalia of the last pocket of Al-Shabaab terrorists.
We, alongside our international partners, are working tirelessly to rid the last pocket of violent extremism and their terrorist activities from Somalia. This task is by no means easy because of the violent, cowardly, and opportunistic guerrilla tactics Al-Shabaab terrorist issues uses, including bombing innocent civilians and private businesses. However, with our holistic strategic of de-radicalization, successful military offensives, the recovery of territory from Al-Shabaab, and the strengthening of Somali National Army and security capabilities, we are confident that our joint efforts with AMISOM and other international partners will bear fruit for Somalia, its people, and for the region and the global stability. We are building a well-trained armed force and right-based security and accountable institutions to take over the responsibility of securing Somalia.
Somalia's President Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed Farmajo speaking Thursday at the ongoing UN General Assembly in New York. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Friday, September the 27th. Daybreak Africa time is 13 and a half minutes past the hour. The late former Zimbabwean President Robert Gabriel Mugabe is expected to be laid to rest in Zvimba community lands this weekend instead of a $1 million mausoleum, which is under construction at the National Heroes Acre in Harare. President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who is at the United Nations General Assembly in New York, is unlikely to attend the burial. Information Permanent Secretary Nick Magwana says the government has given the family the green light to lay to rest the late veteran politician who died of cancer in Singapore early this month.
The family of the late former president, Robert Mugabe, has made the decision that they would like to bury him in Zimba. And as the custom and policy, governments will follow their lead and is following their lead. They've now gone to Zimba. The expectation is that burial will happen over the weekend, possibly Saturday.
What's the role of the government in all this?
As I said, the lead is with the family. Government will play a supportive role. When the body left, obviously government had provided police escort. There's an expectation that possibly the poor bearers will be the military as is normal, and security will be provided by government as well. But the whole burial will be led by the family.
And what will happen to the mausoleum?
Well, The work had started, but I hadn't gone too far to in order not to be stopped. So I'm not sure what the future plan would be, but I think it's another decision which has to be made. It wasn't complete. It wasn't anywhere near completion, rather. So it's not a very big issue at this present moment, but there is a lot that can the foundation that was being laid can be used for.
Who was paying for it?
Government was paying for it, just like if government pays for all other institutions and all other graves that are made for national heroes. So government was paying for that, because remember, this is just a burial place, so government pays for such, and it's almost like asking who paid for Togogara's burial, who paid for the late Vice President Joshua Nkomo's burial. It's the government, so government was paying.
Is the president going to attend the burial?
There is no current plan for the president to attend. This is almost a private burial, but with government support. So president is very unlikely to be attending. I will speak to him when he arrives back home from New York, but he is very unlikely to be attending since it's private. You know, when the president goes to anything, stops being private.
Nick Magwana is the permanent secretary at the Zimbabwe Ministry of Information. He was speaking with Gibbs Dube of VOA Zimbabwe Service. A doctor in Zimbabwe who was abducted and allegedly tortured for leading a doctor's strike has left the country for what his medical team calls urgent treatment in South Africa. They suspect he was poisoned while in captivity. As Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, police, who say they are looking for the doctor's kidnappers, try to block his departure.
Late Thursday, Dr. Peter Magumbei, acting president of the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association, left a medical facility in Harare, where he has been receiving treatment for a week since his release from captivity. He flew to South Africa for what his medical team calls urgent treatment. Friends and colleagues suspect he now has a liver problem from being poisoned during his five-day-long abduction. His father, Kingston Magombei, who has been staying with him at the hospital since his release last Thursday, is relieved.
Yeah, I'm very happy for that step taken by the medical practitioners. I'm very happy with that one. Because there's some areas whereby I feel he needs further medication. What I mean, like, I realize that at times, it's feeble, just weakness in the body, and sort of, even when I hear the doctors, when they come to him, I'm not a physician, but doctors, when they talk to him, they talk of the dysfunctioning of the brain and part of the liver problem, whereby, for sure, I feel very much, even the urinary systems, those three things. That's what I really feel, that he must be observed. The doctor specialist should look at it.
His departure for South Africa only came after the head of the High Court, George Chweshe, chastised the police who blocked the outspoken 27-year-old doctor from leaving. This was despite the doctor's lawyers obtaining a High Court order barring the police from interfering with Magombe's travels. Monica Mchangwa, Zimbabwe's information minister, maintains the police blocked Magombe's departure for safety and health concerns.
The police is keen to apprehend the alleged abductors so as to bring them to justice and protect the public. They therefore sought the court's assistance in delaying Dr. Magombe's departure to South Africa before giving the vital leads they need to advance their investigation. It is duty of the police to protect the safety of all its citizens.
While Magombe has left Zimbabwe for medical treatment, his association says doctors are not calling off their three-week-old strike. His colleagues say the outspoken doctor was abducted for calling the strike on September 3rd to push President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government to raise doctors' salaries currently equal to less than $200 per month. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare.
66 refugees, the first contingent of 500 refugees from Libya, arrived in the Rwandan capital, Kigali, on Thursday. Eugene Uwimana reports from Kigali.
The plane from Masirata Airport to Kigali is carrying mostly minors, single mothers, and the sick. The refugees will be hosted at an emergency lakeside facility at Gashora Transit Center in eastern Rwanda. The construction of the center has ended, and the newly built and freshly painted building is ready to become a peaceful home for the migrants. Kadiango Elize, the coordinator of Gashora Transit Center, explains. He says about rooms, dining rooms, and food, everything's ready. All materials for hygiene and medical equipment are in place. They are going to be able to sleep and live peacefully. After arriving in Kigali, the UNHCR says all stakeholders will look for ways to ensure that the refugees will never again be detained in Libya. Ahmed Bafour is the country director.
And we'll be working closely with the government of Rwanda and the EU to find durable solutions that could include resettlement to a third country, that could include also repatriation to their country of origin.
The resettlement follows a commitment by the Rwandan government in 2017 to host African refugees trapped in Libya, and as European nations crack down on illegal migration. Rwanda's President Paul Kagame called on African countries to cooperate in finding solutions for African problems.
Africa itself is also a source of solutions. There is no doubt that the challenge of global inequality can only be addressed by working together.
In Rwanda, there are mixed views about the decision to accept refugees and migrants from different parts of the continent.
Do you reflect on Rwanda's past and what Rwanda has gone through as a country immediately after the genocide, even during the genocide that was perpetrated against the Tutsi people? Rwandans needed a rescue from other countries. We as Rwandans know that we would want another country to do for us, you know, so that's why we want to give the same help.
According to the UNHCR, Rwanda is the second African country after Niger that has agreed to rescue migrants. In 2017, Rwanda accepted to receive 30,000 of them from Libya. Critics say then that the country had been paid by the European Union to accept migrants. Rwanda dismisses these allegations. It says it's thanks to the big heart of Rwandans that a safe home for refugees has been found. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
The government of Kenya has laid down guidelines on expenditure measures that it says will reduce public spending. Speaking Thursday in Nairobi, Acting Treasury Cabinet Secretary Okur Yatani said a three-year freeze on hiring of civil servants will also be applied in order to manage the high wage bill. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi.
Acting Treasury Cabinet Secretary Okur Yatani, who took office in June this year after the by-then Minister Henry Rotich was forced to leave office following corruption allegations, seems to be under pressure to ensure the government's agendas are met without foreign borrowing. In a letter addressed to ministries, cabinet secretaries, and accounting officers, Mr. Yatani said that at least 60% of county and national government is spent on salaries and allowances.
As we embark on this planned period, Kenyans expect you to come up with practical solutions to the current challenges of bloated public services in the country, ballooning wage bill and high levels of youth unemployment, among others.
The move will see the government operating at its financial means as well as maintaining its microeconomic stability. Yatani says civil servants will have to forgo other expenditures in order to manage the Kenyan debt that the government is struggling to pay.
What we are telling you, there's no other solution. We must address our expenditure. We must reduce our expenditure. Because if we don't live within our means, then we'll be borrowing.
Public servant salaries and allowances for the last financial year 2018-2019 hit US$7.9 billion. President Uhuru Kenyatta says that the wage bill reduction will cut across all the arms of government.
This measure alone will not suffice to balance our budget as required by law. Therefore, I have further proposed wide-ranging cuts in spending as well as austerity measures across all arms of government. The cuts target less essential spending, such as hospitality, foreign and domestic travel, training and seminars, and other similar categories. These budget cuts ask all of us in government that we tighten our belts.
The money saved from the economy measures will be used to finance the government's Big Four agenda. However, some ministries will have to seek approvals from the finance ministry before implementing any pay review, as media advertising has been scrapped off and ministries encouraged to use own website. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Past the hour, time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with news from the first round, second leg qualifying matches in the CAF Champions League scheduled for this weekend. In Tunisia, Asante Kotoko of Ghana are confident of completing the job they started earlier this month in the first round with their 2-0 advantage when they traveled to a more fancied Etoile du Sahel in the second leg of their CAF Champions League round tie on Friday. Jetil Zakariasin is the coach of the Ghanaian side.
We're going to play our game, and hopefully that is good enough. As prepared as we can be at the stage now, we are lucky we don't have any big injuries.
Elsewhere in Uganda, Kampala City Council Authority coach Mike Mutubi has warned his charges to be cautious when they host Petro de Luanda on Friday at the Lugogo Stadium in Kampala. KCCA are attempting to reach the group stages of the competition for a second time in 3 seasons.
It's going to be very tricky. All I can say is you are going to experience a very good match.
In other mouth-watering fixtures, defending CAF Confederations Cup champions and 5-time CAF Champions League winners, Zamalek will have it all to do when they host Senegal's Generation Foot in Cairo this weekend after losing the first leg 2-1. Defending CAF Champions League champions Osporons de Tunis were held to a 1-1 draw by Elect Sporting Chad, but will be overwhelming favourites when the two teams meet for a second time in raids this weekend. 16 aggregate winners will book their place in the group stages of Africa's Premier Cup competition for the 2019-2020 season after this weekend round of matches, while the 16 losers of the first round will enter the CAF Confederations Cup playoff round, where they will battle for a place in the group stages of the continent's second-tier competition. In women's football, South Africa Football Association launched the first Southern Women's Football National League 4 weeks ago. The historic Women's National League has 12 teams across the country competing in a round-robin system. After 3 rounds of matches, South Africa Football Association President Danny Jordan has expressed his satisfaction with the progress that the newly established Women's League is making.
Clearly, we have to help to strengthen the clubs, including training more women to become coaches and assistant coaches in these clubs.
And finally, the 2019 World Athletics Championship begins later today in Doha, with athletes from the African continent setting their sights on improving on their performance from the last championships in London. Kenyan athletes will be under close scrutiny, however, after allegations were made by a German broadcaster of doping by some of their athletes. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Sierra Leone President Julius Maada Bio has made perhaps one of the most forceful and passionate pleas for Africa to get a permanent seat on the United Nations Security Council. President Bio is coordinator of the African Union Committee on the Reform of the UN Security Council. Speaking Thursday at the ongoing 74th United Nations General Assembly in New York, President Bio said the legitimacy and effectiveness of the Security Council's decisions, as well as the relevance of the United Nations, will continue to be questionable. And that is it for this Friday, September 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music.
Wake up, dance this music. Balance.
Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.